GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Will you give a warm welcome to our next guest? They were there on 95. Keith Barr, Peter Canham, and everyone.
Thanks, Peter.
Well, you're very welcome. Keith, how you doing?
Great, Joel. Thanks for having us.
Nice to see each other again.
Yes, it's a long time. I've been this close to him in a long time.
You were marking his brother that day, were you?
I was, Pascal, yeah. Much better player than Peter was. But so his mother said.
Better looking too.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you get on with Pascal that day?
I destroyed him.
Is that right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely destroyed him. He was taken off after 10 minutes. No, he's a... Pascal was a very good player, good centre-forward, very mobile, you know, and he's like, going into that match, this man here beside me was the big name, you know, and the builds up to it, he would have been the man we targeted a lot, like, you know. So we wouldn't worry too much about any other forwards on the Tyrone team at the time, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know you were mainly marking Pascal, but like, there was a really touching moment, I thought, between the two of you. There's a lovely picture, a nice heartwarming kind of moment that happens in these things where you're basically trying to murder him, I would say.
That's called the clothesline.
And 24-year-old Peter Canavan is saying, Jesus.
Yeah. Well, those days, we just listen to your other contributors there. You know, the game, to a certain extent, and I would agree with Jimmy, is a bit sanitized at the moment. You know, I think the physicality of the game has gone out of it. And with that, most...
You can't grab a guy by the neck anymore.
Yeah. Well, if you think of it in those days, most supporters were going to see, you know, Tyrone, Dublin, Meath, Dublin, or, you know, Cork, or whatever, Cork or Meath, the whole lot. But they were also going to see individual battles. You know, and I think that's missing from the game. A lot of people are going in on Sunday. They're going in to see Dublin and Tyrone. They're not particularly focusing on any particular battles between a full forward or a full back or midfield, the whole lot. So to a certain extent, listen to the lads earlier, I would agree that the game is slightly sanitised. And I'd like to see more physicality brought back into the game. I mean, you look at a referee in hurling has a bad game and he blows the whistle. You know what I mean? And and that's what's missing from Gaelic football. You know, the physical, you know, you introduce the mark now, a midfielder wins the ball, you know, and he comes down, he has a mark, everybody has to back off him.
What about that, Peter? Should the likes of Keith be able to smash you a bit more freely? Is that kind of what we're...
Well, Keith Barr wants to make the game more physical. I don't think that'll be a headline, would it, or a surprise? Look, fair point. I recall going to a lot of the Dublin and Meath games back in the late 80s, early 90s, down in Croke Park, and there were brilliant battles, and there were physical battles, and they provided great entertainment. So it's a completely different game now, and especially with the black card now, there's so many defenders reluctant to go in to make the big hit or to risk the big shoulder charge, because if they're a split second late, then they run the risk of getting a black card. So, yeah, that's the nature.
Therefore, it's all standoffish.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And there's more bodies getting back behind the ball.
There's more bodies back, so they're more or less marking space than they are marking men. You know, if you go back to 95, to a certain extent, you would see that it was quite innocent football at the time. It was 15 against 15. Yeah, yeah. There was none of these mad tactics that we have today. Now, you have to accept that's part of our game today, but there was no kick-out tactics, there was no toward midfielders, there was no bodies behind the ball.
There was no rules back then. You could be sent off and stay on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. The referee didn't have cards, you know.
So
it was great innocent football, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, let's bring up some of the controversies from 95 then. So I think we'll start with the final play for a second. Peter, you're obviously at the centre of the action here. So Dublin are ahead by a point, and Tyrone come up with an equaliser in the dying minutes. You're the guy who pushes the ball to McLaughlin. So we'll have a look. We have a clip here. You can clear it up for us then. You were there.
Yeah. McGarrity wrestled down by Paul Clark. Free kick quickly taken. Kieran Cole is unmarked. Cole, will he go for the score? He's pumping it in. McBride comes. So does John O'Leary. Fists it away. And he throws Peter Canavan. Touches it on the ground and it's a free out. scored an equaliser. So does Sean McLaughlin. But the referee's whistle has sounded, and delight will turn to agony for Sean McLaughlin. This is where the ball was fisted away very well by goalkeeper John O'Leary, and the ball was touched on the ground there.
There, Peter Canavan.
There. Yeah. I think Paddy Russell was right. Absolutely.
Being absolutely truthful, honest, what was your read of it?
Did you think it was off the ground?
No.
I agree with you.
Well, I happened to be playing that day, and it was 3 or 4 yards away from it, if you see the screen, and he definitely stroked it on the ground. Absolutely no problem.
Right.
Absolutely no problem.
No, it was marginally off the ground. It's very hard to hit a fist past the ball that is on the ground to get a bit of elevation on it. It was marginally off it. But look, the story that went out, that we were told in the days after he came out of Tipperary, that Paddy Russell actually thought that the score was level at that stage, and that when that point went over, that it was thrown a 1-point lead. Because the kick out immediately after that, it was a controversial game. There's a few incidents in it. It was a game that today a referee would be looking to give a draw, to give both teams another chance. And the kick out, he didn't even play any injury time. As soon as the ball was kicked out, he blew the final whistle. So well, Paddy never said that himself, but that's a story.
Yeah, and in fairness to Paddy, he's not here, because he did say afterwards, it all happened in a split second. As far as I was concerned, Canavan handled the ball on the ground and I blew a free straight away. Everybody would have been happy with the draw, but you do the right thing. And he said, I've only ever watched it back once and I stand by the call that was made. So that's Paddy's take.
But at that time, there was a lot of hype and build-up that Dublin needed to win in All-Ireland, but they didn't need to win it that badly, really.
And Paddy was a man of integrity and he'd done the right thing.
He'd done all right. He wrote a book over the head of it, so he's done all right out of it.
You feel Peter's very sore over it, isn't it?
Well, it is, and because a number of the thrown players, it's a bit easier for me and a bit easier for Chris Lawn, because we got our hands on an All-Ireland medal and we can look back on this. But there's a lot of men who dedicated their lives, and a lot of people here knows what it's like, but that was their chance to win an All-Ireland, and it was taken away from them. Now, after the game, and we spoke as a team, we said there was talk about appealing the game because of what happened with Charlie Redmond, and the player said, look, no, we lost the game on the pitch. We didn't play well enough. Tyrone played below par that day. Dublin didn't play well. They were very good in the first half. So both teams, I think, would have preferred a draw. But the bottom line is, on the day, we didn't play well enough to win it. And that was down to us, not down to Paddy Russell.
Yeah. Well, the Charlie Redmond thing, you mentioned it. We have a video of that as well. So it's one of their clips. So this is Redmond being sent off. And then it's Paddy Russell realising that Redmond was still on the pitch.
I think that's what the referees decided. Charlie collided there initially with Fergal Logan, then an attempted headbutt.
There's so much at stake here, you know, for Dublin today, and they're going to really go at it now from here in.
Having a chat with Willie O'Mahony, who's also the standby referee.
He's gone back to talk to Charlie Redmond again. Did he in fact send him off a few minutes ago, and Charlie continued? This is very confusing. I've never seen anything like this in an All-Ireland final. I think he has sent him off.
You said something to Keith there. What'd you say? You were pointing and
It was just the linesman. I think Seamus Pryor, who was a good referee at the time, was actually the linesman that got Redmond sent off.
Right, okay. Because Paddy Russell talks about that incident as well, and he says, Charlie went to headbutt Logan, it happened near the sideline, probably didn't help the cause, but I pointed to the sideline, I reacted straight away. Red card, fast forward 2-3 minutes. The ball went up the field, next thing I spotted Charlie. I waited until play stopped. I ran over to the linesman, Willie O'Mahony. I asked, did Charlie Redmond get sent off? He said he had, and I said, Charlie's still on the field. He looked over my shoulder and said, Jesus, Paddy, he is.
No word of a lie.
And then he said, I went over to Charlie and I told him, you're off. Charlie said, please, Paddy, don't send me off. It's my last game.
Didn't I tell you it was an innocent time in Gaelic football, didn't I? Absolutely
fantastic. Did he think it was your last game? Oh, Jesus, hang on then. All right.
He said it's my last game and I promise I'll buy 100 copies of your book.
Well, Charlie's from Fingless and we, you know, out there north side, we'll try anything.
Is that right? Okay. Who were the favourites going into that game? I mean, Ulster football in such a great place between Down in 91, Donegal in 92, then Derry in 93, Down again in 94, up come Tyrone. Everyone presumes, well, if they've come out of Ulster. And you were almost the nearly men around that time. It's kind of quaint to think of it. So who were the favourites?
That time, Joe, that was the Ulster tsunami, really, you know, in the early 90s. There were any Ulster team coming down to Croke Park playing semi-finals or finals were just eating everybody up, you know, and they were all genuine winners down Donegal, down again, and Derry in 93 as well. So, you know, you had this Ulster tsunami coming at us, like, and Dublin happened to be at that particular period of time, you know, the common denominator with all those teams. The better us in all Ireland finals or Derry better us in the semi-final on the way, and we happen to be the common denominator. So going into the 95 final, you know, it was going to be a big ask for us, really big ask for us, because, you know, our backs were to the wall, really, because some people say we gave away handy All-Irelands. I don't believe that, and I don't buy into it, the whole lot. The best team wins on the day. But, you know, there was more pressure on us, I would say, going into the 95 final than there would be.
Who was favourites? Dublin.
Dublin, yeah. And it would be, there's no doubt about it. And that's what I'm saying, there was more pressure
Dublin
on us.
Dublin were the more experienced team because of the playing in the finals. Tyrone had won an All-Ireland Under-21, two titles in 91 and 92. So you had a lot of those lads in their early 20s playing in their first All-Ireland final. So, but the fact that Donegal and Down and Derry and all had won the year before gave us a lot of confidence going down. And the fact that Dublin were having difficulty getting over the line. They were a great team, and individually they had some fantastic players, but they had difficulty getting over the line. So we definitely felt we were in a good shout.
Right.
Good
shout, yeah. The word freeze isn't fair, but take my meaning. Did you freeze on the day in any way? Because only two Tyrone players scored from play. You got 11 points. I mean, you brilliant performance. Did you not play up to what you were hoping to do? Or
10 of those were from free kicks that other players were fouled.
By Keith.
Eight of them got a Keith foul.
I don't think I fouled at all that day.
Did you not?
No, I didn't, Peter. No.
That's a first.
Yeah.
No, we didn't. We didn't, but it was a very stop-start game.
Scrappy,
We got to see it recently there. It was on last week or a few weeks ago. But both teams, that's why I felt if it had been a draw, I have no doubt both teams would have performed much better in the replay. But Dublin got off to a great start. This man kicked a point from a free kick. The very first score you got, I think, maybe from 60.
You were 3 points up at that stage.
For Dublin and got them going. Paul Curran was fantastic. Yeah. I think he ended up getting man of the match that day. Desi Farrell was centre-half forward. Half he was superb, gotten a lot of ball. And you had Jason Sherlock in the full forward line as well. So first half, Dublin were very good. Mm.
Does ultimately winning make 95? I mean, you talked about the group in 95 who didn't go on to win. Does winning for you ultimately mean you don't stress too much about it? It doesn't keep you up at night at this stage?
No, it doesn't keep me up at night, but I spoke earlier, and if you speak to Pascal, you speak to Fergal Logan, he's very sore about that game, because that was his chance, and if we had got over the line then, we could have went on, and the 90s could have been a very successful period for Tyrone, but look, hands up to Dublin on the day.
Yeah, but I mean, only one team can win in All-Ireland in any particular year and any particular day. And I'm sure somebody on Sunday and of previous years, most teams and the gentlemen who were up here went home losing All-Irelands, you know. And to me, when, you know, whoever wins in All-Ireland on a particular day in a particular season deserve to win it. And you should never be looking back over your shoulder and saying, should I have done this? Should I have done that? You know what I mean? You got to keep looking forward. And Tyrone, in fairness to them, came good in the 2000s. You know what I mean? And there was, I mean, you take Alan Brogan there. I mean, he won his first All-Ireland in 2011. I mean, he soldiered maybe for 15 years or 14 years without winning one. Mm-hmm. Jason Sherlock tried after 95 for another maybe 10, 12 years to win the second one. So they're hard won. Mm. And when you win it, you obviously take it with both hands and you do it. But, you know, the losers at the and it's sport, and this is what you have to do. You have to dust yourself down and pick yourself up and get on with it. Because you cannot be carrying, to me, that burden with you and on your shoulders for the rest of your life.
Well, this, you know, other big thing for us too, back in the 90s, you had great Donegal, Derry, and Down teams winning it. But for us in 2003, like when you'd Armagh winning it in 2003, anybody could.
Actually, I know. They gave you more momentum, didn't they?
I feel like we need to turn up McGeaney's mic right now.
Yeah. Hold them back. Hold them back.
We have Mickey Hart against Jim Gavin. Two men you know. Was Gavin someone you thought might go into management? I appreciate it's difficult to know. What were your impressions of him as a teammate?
Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, you can play with players and over a long period, and you'll always see certain players to a certain extent say, yeah, he's management. You look at Geezer, he's serious in everything he does in his life, you know what I mean? He sets goals and you can say, yeah, that's the type of individual that will test himself. You couldn't see that necessarily in Jim,
right?
You know what I mean? Now, Jim was obviously in the defence forces and he's very dedicated. But a lot of managers come about being managers because they're given opportunities. Do you know what I mean? And Jim got opportunities to manage Dublin under 21s at the times and stuff like that. And, you know, and he was able to test, put his feet into the water and test it. And that was obviously something he has enjoyed. And he's just gone on to be an unbelievable and fantastic manager.
I wonder, does he actually get the credit he deserves, as ridiculous a thing as that is to say?
I don't think so, Joe. I really honestly think he has. I mean, it's right that all the players should get the plaudits, this, that, and the other. But in the modern game over the last, 10, 12, 14 years, the role of a manager is so important. And the role of them, now the manager's saying we get the players across the white line and it's up to the players to do it. But listen to Jimmy and James and Kieran there. I mean, the build-up to an All-Ireland final for a manager must be so stressful. As a player, you look after yourself, you get on with it, and you think of yourself. As a manager, you have to think of everybody and has everything being done. And the modern-day manager, and games today are won on the sidelines. All-Irelands are lost on the sidelines, and they're also won on the sidelines. And one of the biggest things that's going to happen on Sunday may not be necessarily happen on the pitch. It'd be a decision which Mickey Hart or Jim Gavin will make on that particular day, at that particular time, because there's an incident on the field that subs will have to be brought on,
sure,
a change of tactics. And I think the role of a manager in modern day Gaelic football is just as important as a good player on the field.
Yeah.
There must be one on the City West golf course as well, because it's funny Kieran telling that story about the two McNulty lads putting the buggy in the pond in the City West in 2002, the Saturday before the 2003, Brian McGuigan and Kevin Hughes did the exact same thing. In fact, they were trying to run over me at the time, I didn't know how to do it. But that was a fact as well. But I agree with the point that you make. Jim Gavin certainly doesn't get the credit that he deserves for what he has managed to do with this group of players.
He's dismissed as having a conveyor belt, and how couldn't you win with this group?
He's dismissed in a lot of quarters because he hadn't got into bed with the media. He has figured out, or he's made it clear, that the media does nothing for Dublin as a group. I think he's learned from previous managers that were over Dublin, with very good players as well, and how if you let the media in, that they can destroy you. And he has made it very clear that he wasn't going to let media affect, try and not let them affect his players, but he was going to show them example as well. And last year's final, and I didn't think Dublin were going to win three in a row, because I didn't think they would have the hunger, the desire, and at some stage, players would just go and do their own thing. In the last 10 minutes last year against Mayo, talk about a disciplined team, a team that played to the system, that were the game management excellent, and despite not playing well, they stuck together, they stuck to their game plan, and they got over the line.
Yeah.
And that's a testament to the way they've been coached and set up.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing, really. When Mickey Hart arrived on the scene, you were an experienced player at that stage. Did you recognise this guy was going to be really good and cut it at senior level, or was it a slow burn?
Absolutely. He was a winner. But it's funny, a lot of people, when they watch Mickey on the sideline now, you see him there standing with arms folded and very stoic and calm and taking everything in. And people will say to him, God, that's the way to manage a team. Was he always calm? Far from it. When Mickey started managing teams, he was up and down the sideline. He was effing off referees and opponents and getting involved. And he has managed to transform himself so that he's a manager. He has learnt as he's went along.
He's evolved, yeah.
Of course he has. And he's kicking every ball himself on the sideline. Mm. He's underneath his breath. He's effing and blinding at a referee, I've no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But he manages to hold himself together because he knows that he's going to have to put his big sense to his player.
I think the secret the two managers have, and it's missing someday in sport because people shy away from it, the two managers love success. You know, they love winning. Behind their persona, that's what they do. They're winners, and they crave for success. You know, and we're in a situation of society in Ireland, like, you know, Jimmy and Joe have to play together and everybody has equal games. Don't mind two wins. You know what I mean? People are afraid of success today, you know, and sometimes it's frowned upon. With Jim Gavin and this present Dublin team and with Mickey Hart and his squad, they crave success. They're winners. And it's a funny concept because you'll have some managers, like, you know, they say, like, let's go out and compete and let's be there and let's enjoy the occasion, the whole lot. And there's other managers behind their persona is they'll cut your throat to win. And that's what happens. And Jim Gavin, to me, watching from the outside of it, he's not afraid to make big decisions on big days.
Peter, clearly Dublin are favourites here. One of the lines of hope trotted out is that Mickey Hart is a different animal when it comes to finals. This is one of the great things I've heard. I think he's played managed 30 finals at various levels and lost 3 of them. And obviously he's never lost a senior final. Enda McGinley told a brilliant story a couple of weeks ago on the show about the 0-3 final, where Mickey Hart had got everybody to write nice things about each player on the team. And then the night before the final, in came an envelope under your door and you read all the lovely things your teammates thought about you. It's a small thing, I'm sure it's been done loads of times, but McGinley said, we couldn't lose. I don't know what he did that week, he just had us at a certain pitch and he was phenomenal the week of any final. Your memories of that?
Absolutely. You felt on cloud nine going out onto the pitch. And that's the same with any final, be it with the club and schools as well. He seemed to come into his own coming into finals, and he wasn't a manager that spoke for the sake of talking. Whenever whenever he said something, he meant it. And he had a habit of building the team up, not by running down the opposition that much, or referees or anybody else, but the collective. Very seldom, again, not the type of manager that would go around the training pitch and pull a player aside or talk to this player and go over to that man. It was all about the collective, and that's the way the mindset of those teams, I recall, was that everybody was in the one train of thought. And again, when it comes to motivation, he was on his own. The other story that reflects Mickey and maybe shows you what the players thought of him was in 2005, at the start of the year, or after a few National League games, Mickey got a sports psychologist in to try and help out. And the sports psychologist was going around individually and speaking to a lot of players, but not on the same wavelength as a lot of the players. And prior to one of the championship games, we had a meeting. We're down in Dublin, actually, for the weekend. And at this stage, the players had enough of the psychologist, and they came to myself and Brian Doerr and said, we can't take this anymore. And so they left us to go to Mickey and say, Mickey, you've got to do something with this man. He's causing havoc. But, you know, I got him in and he's good, and he's good for me. I said, well, if he's good for you, let him talk to you, but it's not working. The boys need to hear Mickey Hart speaking. Right. So, and that was a fact.
Right.
Mickey was our sports psychologist. We needed to hear more of what he had to say and less of the bullshit that somebody else had to say.
Right.
And that was a fact.
Because that's funny.
I'm not against sports psychologists. Jim McGuinness is one of them, for God's sake.
I'll just quickly, I don't know if this is true or not, but Owen Mulligan was talking yesterday, and you know that document...
Did Owen Mulligan? No, that's true. I'm surprised at you.
This documentary was on T.G. Carr, Unbreakable Bond, which a lot of people would have saw, and you know, I guess it would have people feeling very proud of Tyrone and get the county going again. Mulligan was saying it wasn't supposed to come out this week. He says he knows the fellas who made the documentary. I know for a fact it wasn't meant to come out this week. I was chatting the fellas that made it. That's Mickey, is what he says. Mickey's cute, you know, because he was saying Mickey was wondering in interviews, where's all the bunting, where's the hype in the county? He says, next thing, bang, this documentary's on and the county's gone wild.
What time of the night were you talking to him at this time?
Does Mickey Hart control the TG Carr schedule, is what I'm asking you. I don't know. And was there not much hype in the county? What's it like up there?
If it had been the RTE schedule, he might have been controlling it, not TG4. What's it?
What's the atmosphere like? Like, is there bunting out? Is there a big hope? Or is there a sense of, oh?
Yeah, there's excitement. First of all, because it's been 10 years, and a lot of the youngsters in the county have never experienced this feeling before of getting to an All-Ireland final. So there is a feel-good vibe in the county. But I think it's dosed with realism too, in that we know that Tyrone are going to have to take it to another level, a level that we only seen in glimpses against Donegal, glimpses against Monaghan maybe, and that they're going to have to play for that over an hour and 10 minutes. So, yes, there is excitement and all the rest, but I think we're realistic enough to know that there's a massive ask of these boys on Sunday.
I presume Hart won't be under pressure at the end of this season if they lose, even if they lose badly, because I mean, it seems, you know, there's a tide against him at times up there. I presume he's back in credit after this year, or is he?
You'd think that, but again, with some quarters, and the boys spoke about it as well, that with some people you can never please. But again, back in 2003, before we won it, he kept using the word persistence. And again, if he was telling the players about it and the benefits of it, well, there's a man who lived by it, because he had more than enough opportunities to throw in the towel. And talk about a man that's had to cope with personal tragedy in his life. And he's got his own reasons why he wants to get thrown over the line and why he wants to get his hands on the Sam Maguire again. And I think that that persistence and his enthusiasm is infectious, and the players can respond to that, and hence they're in the position that they're in on Sunday.
What's going to happen on Sunday, Keith?
That's the million-dollar question, really, isn't it? At this stage, I really hope Tyrone come up and go out and go for that game. It is so important. I think we need it. I don't think we had a good football championship this year. If Tyrone played the way at times they did against Monaghan and dropped back, I think Dublin will swamp them. I would like to see Tyrone come up, be positive, go man on man. I'm not talking about pushing up on Dublin. Just go man on man, force Cluxton out with his kick out, make it a good game, and go and try win the game. Don't try lose the game from defending. You know what I mean? And that's what people... I want Tyrone to come up and say, there's an opportunity here for them. There's an opportunity, it's 70 minutes. And we all played at a high level here. We know, and we all played in All-Ireland finals and managed in All-Ireland finals. Anything can happen on the day, all right? But you've got to make it happen, and that is the secret. And I believe if Tyrone come up and stick to a system by trying to hit Dublin on the break, and get numbers behind the ball like they did in the All-Ireland semi-final last year, you know, I can only see one winner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Peter, what Keith is saying is what everybody is saying. They have to have a go. And I have a real sympathy for Mickey Hart here, because you think back to the semi-final and they concede an early enough goal and there was this sense, well, they're behind now and there's big trouble. Is there nothing to be said for let's stay in the game and cling on by our fingernails as long as we can and then hope last 15 minutes something happens?
Well, if you do that, you invite Dublin
onto
you. And if Tyrone concede the kickouts and get back in numbers and think of slowing them down, I think they're asking for trouble, because Dublin don't give the ball away generally whenever they win it.
Yeah.
The Tyrone stats against Monaghan in kickouts was the 1-2 out of 24 Monaghan kick-outs. Well, if they do that again, Dublin, then in my opinion, they're asking for trouble, and it's going to be a long afternoon for them. The last 10 minutes of the game in Omagh, when they pushed up and when they were more aggressive, they won 4 of the last 5 Dublin kick-outs. So they can do that, they can turn them over, and if they're going to get something out of the game, I think they have to be aggressive. You can't do it in every kick-out.
Yeah, of course.
There's times you have to sit back, surely. But we need to be more aggressive and try and put Dublin on the back foot.
And realistically, leaving your heart out of it, no pun intended, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to be the final score?
I expect Dublin to win. And the reason being, I do believe that our boys are there's a big game in them. They're hungry. They've never won an All-Ireland medal, the vast majority of the team. So there's natural hunger there. But last year, Mayo did brilliantly up until the last 10 minutes, and when the game was there up for grabs and the two managers looked over their shoulder, it was Jim Gavin could pick one All-Star, ex-All-Star after multiple All-Stars, former player of the years.
All-Ireland winners.
To come off. And I'm not even talking about Cormac Costello at this stage, who has repeatedly come on and scored. So, unfortunately, we have younger lads coming on that we're hoping will do the business. Dublin have men who they know will do the business. And again, it's something that Throne are going to have a plan for. But I just don't think, maybe, we're a year or two early. I do believe this Throne team will win an All-Ireland in the next 2 or 3 years. I'm sure of that, but maybe not Sunday.
Well then, final question, Keith, maybe a slightly different question, the kind of question Jim Gavin would hate, but if you were a betting man today, would you say Dublin are going to do the 5 in a row?
I think they have a good opportunity to do it. I genuinely mean that. I think Dublin are a very good team. I'm not a fool to stand up on the stage and say they can't be beaten on Sunday.
Sure.
Of course they are. But when you look out at the teams out there, I can see 1-2 max that can turn over Dublin in the next 12 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that is the reality of it. And that's why I question these certain teams going out with certain tactics. You know, to go and beat Dublin, you have to beat them at their own game. You have to go at them. And that's the secret. And the secret of all of these matches as well, Dublin actually have very good footballers. You know, and that's the reality. And some teams don't.
Yeah, sure.
And you look at Tyrone on Sunday, like, for them to succeed, they need to stay in this game with 10 minutes to go, a place that Dublin haven't been for a while, and turned them over.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting.
Have a go, stay in the game. I mean, who'd be a manager? Well, it's tricky.
Forget about five in a row. Very last word. If you open an account with Boyle Sports now, they're giving 50-1 on Throne to win on Sunday.
Yeah.
Not right, Leon?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can put your money where your mouth is. Let us know how you get on. Don't go anywhere, because our next guest is coming straight on. But would you give Keith and Peter a big round of applause, everyone, please?
Thank you,
lads. Thanks very much. So we are here tonight. Peter mentioned Boyle Sports, the show sponsors, and we'll talk to Leon later on, actually, about how the market's shaping up. But a bit of hush for our next guest. We're delighted she's here, I have to be honest. She made her championship senior debut for Mayo at the age of 13, as you do. 4 All-Irelands with Mayo, runner-up 3 times, 3 National Leagues, 11 All-Stars, Club All-Irelands with Carnacun, and now she's played her first season in the AFL. So we're delighted to get her before she jets off again. Will you welcome, please, everyone, Cora Staunton? Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming. The jet set lifestyle that you lead now. Sydney, Dublin, Mayo.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of months, all right. Came back from Sydney just at the end of April, start of May. So had a season there with the Sydney Giants playing AFL. So a totally different game and a totally different experience, but one I enjoyed and one I hope to go on again in November sometime.
Great. So once again, Mayo just can't but try and grab the headlines here. And there's a saga of its own going on in the ladies' game at the moment. You're probably tied in what you can say. I appreciate that. Short version is, back during the summer, 12 players left the Mayo team, 8 of them from Carnacun. You're one of the players who left. Player welfare issues were cited. I've heard about 3 billion rumours, and It's been very tight-lipped from the camp. You can tell us what happened now if you want.
I might take out the phone anyways, because the appeal is on at the moment, so I'll give you an update in a few minutes.
Well, we'll come to that, yeah.
I'd say I'm associated with probably 2.99 million of them rumours anyways.
Yeah.
So I suppose I came back from Australia and decided to give another go at Mayo. Was very unsure about going back, obviously, because I've been there a long time and had a very long season, obviously winning with Cairnacun on the 3rd of December, winning the Club All-Ireland, and flew to Sydney on the 5th of December, arrived in Sydney on Thursday morning and started pre-season with the Giants. And then obviously had 5 months out there, so you know, I had probably a 17-month season, came back to Mayo, and obviously it's well documented now, after the Connacht final, 12 players left, as we put out, for welfare reasons. You know, a lot of the reasons are very sensitive and personal to the girls themselves that left, and you know, I'm not going to speak on behalf of 11 other girls and two members of management along with that left. And from that, Tuesday night, 9 days ago, the Mayo County Board, because of us leaving, Mayo decided to expel Cairnacun from this year's league and championship. So at the moment, we don't have any club football, as I said. The club has appealed to the decision, and the decision has been heard by Connacht Council tonight, sometime around 9 o'clock.
Yeah, the rule they used to kick Cairnacun, and just Cairnacun out, as opposed to the other clubs, because there were four other players who left, but it's just Cairnacun who seem to be getting the brunt here. They said you brought the game into disrepute, which is just nonsense, really. I don't know how. It's not slave labour. You don't have to play for the county. So how have they got away with this, is my view from the outside.
I don't really know. Obviously, I've probably looked at the rule book more in the last 7 or 8 days than I ever have. You know, and some of the rules are in the rule book are, you know, quite, when you look at them, you wonder why they're even allowed in a rule book. I think there's another rule, I'm not sure what it is. It's 293, where that if you decide to step away from county football and don't represent your county as an individual, you can be suspended for 6 months.
Yeah.
As far as I was aware when I started playing football for Mayo, or, you know, it's I do because it's my choice, and if I want to leave at any stage, it can leave. I really don't know how we brought the game into disrepute. You know, as a club, we were in shock, obviously, on the Tuesday night when we heard it. I'm very disappointed. We're a small rural club that's probably been punching above our weight for the last 2 decades. And maybe that's why we're being punished. We've been very successful as a club.
Is it 18 years on the bounce you've won the county championship?
We're going for county title number 20 this year out of 21.
Right. I was looking. They're like, so the county board, I was going to say they were clever, whatever. They got the club delegates to vote. So the clubs that you've been trouncing for the last 20 years voted.
Yeah, some of the clubs. It's very important. You know, I don't know the workings of county board meetings. I don't attend them. I'm a player. But it's very important to note that I think there's two delegates are sent to most county board meetings. So there was 24 clubs, I think, that voted against us. Obviously, we had one delegate from our club at the meeting. So there was one other delegate from another club that voted with us. So then there was 24 votes, but that could come from just 12 clubs. All clubs mightn't be represented. They don't attend every monthly meeting of the county board. So we're not sure how many clubs actually attended the meeting on that night.
But in terms of votes, it was 26-2.
Yeah. So there's obviously a couple of clubs. But I suppose if you're county champions, you know, for 19 years out of the last 20, you know, you're after winning a club All Ireland, you know, you've probably dominated club football in Mayo for the last 20 years. I heard Edwin McGrail, you know, talk that we probably wouldn't be the most liked club team in Mayo, which we're not going to be liked. It's like the Dublin men's footballers are not the most liked county team in Ireland, but they're winning.
Yeah. But this is outrageous. Like, this is absolutely scandalous. Are you confident of the appeal tonight, or do you have no idea?
Well, we'd be quietly confident. You know, a lot of work has been put in. I think the most important thing, what's the disappointing thing for us, I suppose over the last 9 days, you know, Cairnacun has been everywhere. You know, we probably haven't been as popular on social media and the media for everything that we've won. But now when our name has been blackened because of a dispute with the county board, I think it's very difficult that, you know, it happens, that it's not for the right reasons. We've young girls in the club, as you know, on our senior team, as young as 14 years of age. They don't know what's happening. You know, all we want to do is go out and play football.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the biggest thing, that you know, myself and a number of the girls that played for the county team, we're role models for the county, you know, for them girls in our club. And I just think it's very important that, you know, them girls, you know, the right story will eventually come out on what's happened. You know, I think we've been very dignified over the last number of months. What's happened? The Mayo girls were obviously in intercounty in county football, and you know, nothing was said. But I'm sure in time it'll come out. But it's disappointing for the club. But we're hoping to be back in Championship. You know, we're training away. We've no doubt we'll be back in it, and you know, hopefully we can retain our county title and move on and try and get back and win another All Ireland.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. Hopefully, for sure. You made your debut for Mayo at 13. Like, was that incredibly unusual at the time?
No, I wouldn't say incredibly unusual. I think there was probably me and probably another couple of girls, maybe were 15 or 16 at the time. Ladies football was a very young sport at the time. Nowadays, you have to be 16 or over to make your debut. So I think it's very important that, you know, at the time, people harp on about, you know, it's very young. It's just the way ladies football was. It wouldn't happen now. And I suppose, you know, the seasons were all past, and we start to do very well with Mayo at 17. We get to our first All-Ireland, win it, and do well for the next couple of years. And I suppose the years roll into one. And, you know, I've been very lucky with injuries that I've kept managing to play with Mayo. You know, I enjoy it. It's like the lad said, you know, people are on about, you know, it must be really hard. You're working, you're doing this, you're doing whatever. But I enjoy it. I love it. I love the competitive element. I love making myself better. You know, when I was in Sydney, it was a whole new sport I had to pick up, but I loved it because I wanted to be better at it. Even now that I'm back from Sydney, you know, I'm down in our local pitch a couple of nights a week trying to kick an AFL ball and trying to get better so that when I go back and I can improve and be better than I was last year. So, you know, we talked about Kieran. It probably does become a little bit of an obsession, but I really enjoy what I do. I enjoy keeping fit. And enjoy being competitive and being in that competitive environment.
Yeah, and how did you take to AFL? So you mentioned you're kicking the ball. Kicking the ball well?
No, not too well at the time. I've probably learned how to kick the ball properly since I've came back rather than I was over there.
Right.
I've probably broken it down. I've watched a lot of footage over the time when I was there.
So were you still kicking around the corner?
Yeah, I was still kicking around the corner when I was over there. So I've taught myself to learn in the environment. And James, you know, probably in Ballintubber or Clogher, trying to learn the game, and I've learned how to do it right. I watch a lot of the men's games now at the weekend. There's probably 8 games on the weekend, and probably learning off a few of them how they kick and breaking down the technique. So eventually I've got it right, but at the time over there when you're learning, it's very difficult. Football is just, everything just happens naturally for me. In AFL, nothing happens naturally for me. I have to try to remember maybe 100 things at a time. So I tried to break it down that every game was maybe trying to learn maybe 2 things at a time that I could get better at. The challenge.
Yeah, so like now you're just punting it, I presume. It's like with your laces.
Yeah,
there's
a certain way that you kick it. So you just, there's a certain way you hold it. There's a rubber part at the front of the ball that has to always be out front. So you have to, when you catch it and you feel the ball, you have to look for that feel of the rubber part. And it has to be very straight when you're kicking it. And when you kick it, it should naturally just spin.
Yeah.
So it's just to learn that.
Instinctively, someone who's played all their life is going to catch the ball and they'll find the rubber part without even thinking.
Yeah, exactly. So you bring it down and you have time because you can run 15 metres with the ball without bouncing it. So you have time to do it. I've just taught myself properly how to do it, which is good. But it's been difficult, when I go over there, you're in a pressurized environment again, whether you can be doing it consistently when you're over there, you know, hopefully.
And what about the rules? Complicated, easy to get the hang of when you're out there?
Oh, no, I'm still struggling on them. It's probably not the rules, it's probably the education of the game where I probably struggle a little bit more. It's very game plan based. So when you're learning the game, the education of the game, as we call it over there, we'd have an education evening every Thursday evening over there to learn the game. So they split the oval, as they call it over there, into 9 sections. So for each of the 9 sections that the ball, we have a thing called a throw-up.
Right.
So we have a ruck, so that's the real tall person that's trying to win the ball back. So there's a ruck. So each of them 9 sections, so it could be the back 50, the mid 50, or the forward 50. Each of them 9 sections. The corridor is the middle part of the ground, and then there's boundary side. Each of the 9 sections, there's a different play. So if it's in the back 50 in the corridor, which is the middle, which would be like in the centre-back or full-back position in Gaelic football, and I'm a forward, I have to be somewhere where if it's in the forward 50 and the boundary, I might have to be somewhere else. So it's to learn all that, wow. And you're panicking in the middle of a game going, really? Where am I meant to be, yeah. Or how are we meant to be lined up, or what's the shape? That I'm probably still struggling a little bit, but as I said, the more I watch, the more I can see and more I can learn.
And what happens if you're not in the right place?
You normally, as they call it over there, you probably normally get a good spray, or you'll have someone maybe that'll try. And, you know, with girls in our forward 50, we play with five forwards, they'll be shouting at me to move here, move there.
Okay.
But a lot of the time I was trying to learn it as I was going along over there.
Wow, amazing. And what's it been like to live as a professional, I guess, is probably the dream of a lot of GAA people.
Yeah,
Your family over there as well?
Yeah, so I have my brother and his wife live over there, and they're two boys. To live over there, obviously, the life of a professional, I didn't work over there. It's a semi-professional sport that will eventually turn professional. Each year, the AFL are bringing extra teams in. So there was 8 teams in the competition last year. There's 10 this year, and next year they're going to 14, eventually going to 18 like the men. But while I was there, I was just training full time. So yeah, you're training every day. They're probably focus a lot more on recovery and minding your body and stuff like that than they do in the GEA.
Nice.
Lots of the time, I was getting very impatient and annoyed with them because we weren't training, and I wanted to get out in the pitch, or I'd go out extra, do extra sessions myself, kicking especially, and I'd have people timing me and watching me, and my physio would be out, or the strength conditioning coach going, we said you could go out for 20 minutes, it's time to come in, and I'm like, but I'm fine.
Right.
So that type of stuff I found hard, and a lot of the time you'd be trying to sneak out and do your extra stuff and stuff like that. But I suppose I had a very good relationship with our coach, where he kind of said to them, you know, back off, she's been playing sports at home for long enough, she knows her own body at this stage. So, you know, probably as the season went on and I was the longer I was there, they probably backed off a bit, but... You know, I was probably looking to train. Like, I'd be out at the club a couple of hours before training, always out on the pitch, trying to make myself better, watching footage, whatever I could do. Again, because I was going from such a low base, I was the only girl over there that hadn't played AFL, and I wanted to be good, you know.
Yeah.
This club had taken a huge gamble in bringing me over here. I needed to repay them, and I wanted to be good. And that's when I go back, I wanted to be even better. I wanted to go back and say, do you know what, she's put in the work while she's been in Ireland, and I want to go back and be better than I was last year.
And did you get good by their standards? Were you one of the better players?
The way they judge it over there, it's a bit like we judge it here, is like they have a best and fairest night each club at the end of the season. So there's 30 girls, obviously, on our team. 22 get picked for matches. Starts with 18 players, and we have 4 interchange. They come on and off all the time. So on the basis that I get good at the end of the year and the best and fairest after each round of matches, we have 4 coaches, our head coach, a forwards coach, a mids coach, and a back coach. They vote after each match. So after each match, after each of the 8 matches, they voted, and you get points. And this is done at a big awards night for the club at the end of the year. So for me, that was probably, you know, I've won a lot in Gaelic football and other sports. This is probably my biggest achievement. I came 6th out of the 30 girls.
Wow. Wow.
In the club. So.
It's not bad.
But the problem is now I have to try and beat 6th for next year, so it'll be very hard to obviously
get into
the top 5. You're talking about girls that's been playing the sport since they were 7 or 8, and some of them are, you know, the top AFLW players in Australia.
I know Kieran McGinney will give out to me if I say you're gifted. So let's just say you work incredibly hard and have become incredible at, well, now 2 sports, it seems. Like, when you were 13 with Mayo, were you like one of the better players?
Yeah, I suppose I've been probably lucky enough. I've been a starter all my life, yeah. You know, I recognised when I was probably about 7 or 8, and when I was playing with the local Ballintubber boys team for a couple of years because there was no girls football, you know, I knew I was good. You know, me and another girl were always starting on the local boys team, and, you know, every sport I probably played at the time, a lot of handball and racquetball and basketball and soccer, you know, I used to do quite well, and in national school was the same thing. So I recognised I was talented. You know, I picked my secondary school. My other brothers and sisters would have gone to a different secondary school than I would. But, you know, I told my parents I wasn't going to that school because there was no sport. So I went to a different secondary school. and you know was lucky enough, you know, straight away to make the senior school team in Ballinrobe at the time and win All Ireland. So I suppose I knew I was naturally talented when I was growing up.
Yeah. And how would 12-year-old boys take to Corus Dunton scoring 1-7 on them?
Yeah, at the start they all wanted to mark you. I'd say after 15 minutes no one really wanted to mark you.
It's not a good look for a 12-year-old boy to have that happen.
I was lucky. I played with the likes of Alan Dillon and Gary Dillon, his brother, and you know, all the lads at the time, they were very good. You know, they protected you and looked after you. You know, you'd obviously get the odd belt here and there, you know, when a goal or two went in, but they always looked after you. But like, going back to like your talent, I knew I was talented, but I think it came to a stage maybe where I was 14 or 15. And I was going through a really rough part of my life at the time. My mother would have got sick and would have died when I was 16. And, you know, I started to maybe go around down the wrong path and started to put on weight and just had no interest in football. Until a couple of people kind of put me back into the right path and dragged me back into football. And then I had to work really hard.
Okay.
Because I was getting that bit older, maybe had a bit of weight on and, you know, wasn't the person, you know, the star that I would have been growing up and things were easy. And then that from them few years that we done very well at Mayo from 17 till I was about 21, 22, we won 4 All-Irelands, we were in another one and lost by a point to Leash. I had to work really, really hard. Right. And I think them 5 years were the basis of me wanting to make myself better. We had an absolutely unbelievable manager at the time.
Finbar Egan,
that made me want to be the footballer I was and probably made me, you know, the sports person I am today, that's been very driven. And, you know, as was said earlier, we talk about, you know, competing and, you know, it's all about, you know, once everyone's happy and enjoying it. I suppose I come from a culture where we love winning.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it all our lives. And I suppose I, you know, even now, I've been playing so long and being 36 years of age, I still want to make myself better, whether it's for Carnacona, whether it's for the Giants in Sydney or whatever sport I am. You know, I want to be the best I can be.
Yeah, remarkable stuff. And, you know, I guess to finish where we started in a way, so you win those All-Irelands very early. I think, so by the age of 23, you've been playing a decade, which is kind of a funny thing. And you've won 3 or 4 All-Irelands at that stage. And then there's just a long period where Mayo don't win All-Irelands again. The county board again rear their head. There's a lot of disagreements. They pull you out of the championship in 2010 because I think they think you're troublemakers. If you were to bluntly sum it up, you had that great manager at the start when you were young. And then from 23 on, you probably had a decade where, or close to a decade, you weren't getting managers, frankly, that were good enough. Is that too blunt or is that fairly?
No, I think in the period there was a few. We got to an All-Ireland final in 2007 under Frank Brown, and you know we won the National League. We're the first team to beat Cork in, I think, 28 matches in 2007 in the National League semi-final. We won a National League that year, got to a final. We were beaten by Cork in the All-Ireland final. But there was no continuity, there was no consistency in managers. We're having managers every year, so that was difficult. You know, and there's times then you say to yourself, people say, why didn't you walk away or why didn't you go off and, you know, maybe do a J1 in America or play football in America? And you would have offers, but, you know, I very passionate, like James said, you know, Mayo is a very strong footballing county and you want to do your best. You know, I'm lucky enough that I got to play on the Mayo jersey for 24 years of my life. And my only wish, that, and I've said it for many years, that when I retire from Mayo football, that I'd leave that jersey in a better place than it was and the team in a better place than it was. Whether that has happened now, who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're just so passionate about playing for your county. And obviously, I'm hugely passionate about playing for my club. And I think in the years that probably things were going bad for Mayo, we were doing very well in club.
We
won Club All-Irelands in 2007 and 2008. We won our first in 2002.
Yeah.
And we were still doing very well. We were completing at All-Ireland semi-final stage. And I suppose that keeps you going.
But it's just the love of the game, I suppose, that you just
keep playing.
It's a disappointment, though. I mean, and that we're back here with the county board again. Will we see you in a Mayo jersey again?
Who knows? You know, at the moment, I probably couldn't see that happening. To be honest, if I'm being real, I don't think I'll ever play for Mayo again. I certainly, you know, I'll continue to play with Carnacun for as long as I can, and give as much as I can to them. You know, as I said, there's girls they're coming up now. We've a really young bunch of girls. We brought 12 of our minor team into the team last year. They won their first All-Ireland for the club and won their first county and Connacht title. You know, I want to give them girls a couple more county and Connacht titles and All-Irelands, and, you know, I'll probably, you know, in the day with Cairnicon then, but, you know,
It's a pity it ends like that.
Yeah, but, you know, no one gets their ID Linden. There's very few people that get their ID Linden. You know, I've been lucky enough, there's people that have to retire from sport because of illness or because of injury or because whatever else. You know, there's very few people get what they want at the top. Listen, I've had 24 years in a Mayo jersey. You know, I've won 4 All-Irelands and I've won numerous other things with Mayo, and I've won a lot with my club. You know, I've had a massive career. I've been lucky enough that, you know, at 35 years of age, I go across and play professional sports in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't been all bad.
No.
That sport, and, you know, you just have to be happy with your lot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I mean, you're kind of a living legend in GAA, really. Don't go anywhere, and don't you go anywhere, but round of applause for Cora Staunton, everyone.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.